JC2S, Part 2.
Number 12A.
Yes, so as I was saying before we turned the tape, that when we reduced this amount of text now to an abstraction, which then can be used to make an epitome, we just want to really take out the essence of what she has said. And this is an art of abstraction. So as an art and in science, it takes time to get the rhythm of it, the feeling of it. But at least we take a text that is linear and begin to put it more and more into an abstract form. It's note-taking. When we went to at school, whether it was just through up to high school or on, as we did to the university, we took notes and we learned how to just take out the essence of something. Well, that becomes the art of it, reducing the text just to bare essentials. So here, then, I have, as I said, divided my page in half, and often in the notes you'll see on the left-hand side, I'll put down that positive tone of life in and of spirit that runs through the text. Then on the other side, on the right-hand side, I'll put down the negative tone, the opposite of life in and of spirit as it runs through the text. I just separate it out. So I saw, therefore, that there is this positive sense. It's that theology which is in and of spirit. That was that theology, of course, what Jesus stood for. That theology which was living, that theology which was evolving, the theology that made himself equal with God. Therefore, it was that theology that had the spiritual sense of life, life in and of spirit. That theology of Jesus was opposed by Judaism, the opposite of that living theology, which is antipathetic. Antagonistic, opposed. And that Judaism had a material concept of life rather than the true theology having a spiritual concept of life. And that material concept of life was a limited form, the opposite of spirit, of a national tribal religion, the opposite of true theology. It was a finite material system, the opposite of spirit, concerning God and man. So right away we say, oh yes, well, the theology in and of spirit is that sense, has a spiritual sense of life, where old theology is just life in and of the material concept, in and of a material finite form, finite material systems concerning God and man. But that living theology that is Jesus' theology, which is life in and of spirit, it comes to us through the Emmanuel, God with us. And it's going to be that life in and of spirit, that theology in and of spirit, that's going to make us evolve. That's going to make us see that we are the Son of God. Therefore, it is a theology on a spiritual foundation. And we see then that Jesus was taught as he was inspired by that life in and of spirit. And when he was taught as he was inspired by the Father of life in and of spirit, he was in church. That was his theology. That was his religion. To be taught by the one life, which is God, is theology. Not going to church. He was constantly in church. Constantly. That's, we begin to hear her living sense of theology. He wasn't taught by a priest or by a minister or by somebody's teacher teaching him, was he? As the old concept of religion is, that we're taught in the church about spiritual things. He was taught spiritual things by the Father, life. And therefore he was taught, as he inspired by the life, God, that life was spiritual, and that their only substance and evolution that is going on was within God. That there's no life intelligence or substance outside of God's spirit. That's what he was learning. He was constantly at prayer, constantly in church, constantly worshiping the fact that life is in and of spirit. Life is not in and of matter. And that is what brought him forward. And we see that was then his theology. And the way he learned, you see, that was spirit. He was learning his theology from spirit, from life, from evolution. He wasn't, as the marginal Sahedi saying, priestly learning. He wasn't learning from the priests. He wasn't learning that life was in and of spirit in, as I just said, old trappings of old theology. He wasn't learning that you would learn, as you see there, the marginal heading, priestly, the opposite of theology, learnings, the opposite of spirit, because those learnings are what? Material concepts. Yes?
I'm a little bit confused. The Old Testament being revelation, mm-hmm. spiritual revelation and spiritual record, and yet Mrs. Eddy is pointing out that Judaism is the antithesis of Christianity, mm-hmm. and yet Judaism was the custodian of the Old Testament. So I'm wondering, is this because the Jews departed from the Revelation?
Yeah, she's bringing out here that you either see the young girl or the old woman in evolution, because that old concept of Judaism, that old theology, she's showing of the second record of creation, because she's taking us back to that very first document, the Jehovistic document, the J document that gave us a second record of creation. She's not talking of the priestly document that gave us then the first record, of which then we, Christian Science, is from that Judaic Christian line. The Judaic Christian line we're from is that line that started at about 550 BC that gave us the priestly document. But you see, as we know, there are many documents that were written before the priestly document. So there was, first of all, the J, E, and D document. The J document was the very first one written that they know of in and around 850 BC. That was the Yahweh document, the Jehovistic document. That's the document when, as I said, the second record of creation was written. In that old theology said God was a tribal God amongst other gods. It was just idolatry. It was just a mythology. That God was a war and vengeance. See, that's the second record. It's all mythology. It's that Judaism that gave us the second record of creation as reality. And therefore, that theology that bases itself on the second record of creation is not the theology she's talking about. That theology that's based on the material concept of duality. The Jehovah and the concept of the second record of that J document, she says, I'm opposing with the priestly document. And after the Jehovistic document, we have then I think it's the Elohistic document. Anyhow, it's the next document that comes in and around 750 BC. Then there's another document, I believe it's the Deuteronomic document that comes in and around 50 BC, which begins to become attenuated, because that old Jehovistic document of 850 BC, which has Jehovah as a tribal God, as a dualistic God, begins to attenuate through evolution, because God then is called Elohim. He becomes one God, not one God amongst many, monotheistic. It begins to attenuate until when they went into captivity at 500 BC, they took the J, E, and D documents and gave us the priestly document, but on a higher basis. And there in the priestly document, as I said now, that Elohim and Jehovah, both of those terms for God, appear in the priestly document. But she says in there that Elohim is Jehovah. And therefore, in the priestly document, they put in the first record of creation, as I said, where that Elohim is monotheistic. But Moses defined for us from that priestly line God as the I am that I am, that Jehovah. He says, I am that I am. So Jehovah takes on a new meaning. So we have to know the history of the Bible to say, yes, we are the line of the spiritual line comes from the Judaic Christian line, from that 500 BC line, that pure line of reasoning from the first record of creation. That's what we're from, always reasoning correctly. We're not from the line that takes the second record of creation. So there is no conflict. It's just an understanding of biblical history there. So priestly learnings is referring back then, wouldn't it, Kay, then to that early documents. And there God as Yahweh, Jehovah, is dualistic. And therefore, we see that it's not quite the true knowledge of God, creeds and rituals. All right? So we already now in our abstraction have been able to glean just the essence of what we have read so far. Now with that meaning, we go on. All right, two. The next, we'll take the next couple marginal headings. And the word martyr. What did we think we heard when we went through this concerning that term martyr? What tone did we pick up? The word martyr from the Greek means witness, but those who testified for truth were so often persecuted unto death that at length the word martyr was narrowed in its significance and so has come always to mean one who suffers for his convictions. So now martyr has one meaning or two meanings, does she say? Two meanings. The word martyr was from the Greek, which meant witness, but... That means there was, at one time it meant witness, but now, see, two.
Well, I was reading ahead.
It's okay, doesn't it? But we want to see that there's two, because that's important, because she's showing that the word martyr from the Greek means witness. Huh, Dave? We hear that, that's one. But those who testified for truth were so often persecuted unto death. So there's two meanings of witness. Now, what is the sense that we usually consider as martyr? Meaning, Dave?
The one that suffers for their
condition. Okay, so that is the opposite of?
Life,
huh? Because the opposite of life is to rob, to have lack, to take away of, to persecute. That's the opposite of life, giving life. Persecution always wants to rob one of life. So persecution unto death is the opposite of life. So it has turned out that a martyr has come to mean that which is robbed of life. Huh? Louisa? Put up page 134. Mm-hmm. All right, so we have the text up on the board. So we see that word martyr can have a positive and negative sense of life, both. When it means witness, it means one who, we would say, testifies to the truth. We'll see that, testifies to life. But first of all, she's just pointing out that there are two concepts to martyr. One is witness, and the other is that which is persecuted unto death. Persecuted unto death, then, is the opposite of life. It means to rob, doesn't it? Lack. Okay, do we hear? Okay. That at length the word martyr was narrowed. See, it was taken away from meaning also witnessed in its significance, and so has come always to mean one who suffers for his convictions. That's that opposite sense of life, one who suffers for his conviction. He has been robbed of life. That's wonderful. We know that of life, that life robs. That whole tonality of the opposite of life. So we can see that just already we've learned through our concept building of life itself. The new faith in Christ's truth so roused the hatred of the opponents. Well, the opposite, there's the opposite tone spirit of of the new theology of that life in and of spirit, that the followers, a follower is always that which goes the way, and that which goes the way has a tone of life, that the followers were burned, crucified, and otherwise persecuted. So burned, crucified, persecuted, the opposite of life. Huh? They were robbed of their life, those followers, of life in and of spirit. And so it came about that human rights were hallowed by the gallows and the cross. Gallows and cross are just the opposite of life because they bring death, they bring persecution.
Does hallowed be thy name fit in with spirit?
Yes, we just let that be right at the moment, huh? We can come back to that. Mm-hmm. I think just we can always come in and fill that in. Uh-huh. All right, we go on and see. All right, these man-made doctrines are waning. Waning is the opposite of life in and of spirit. Mm-hmm. So that would have both tones. Life in and of evolving, if I just have one tone, yes. Man-made doctrines are waning. Old theology is not evolving. It doesn't have the tone of life in and of spirit. It has the tone of life in and of entropy, going backwards towards its heat death. They have not waxed strong is a sense of spirit, the strength of spirit in times of trouble. Devoid of the Christ power, lack of the Christ power, the opposite of life. How can they illustrate the doctrines of Christ or the miracles of grace? How can they illustrate the true theology of life? Life tone. Denial, again, robbing of the possibility of Christian healing. Robs, again, the opposite of that new theology, of the very element which gave it divine force, which gave it its life force, and its astonishing, surprising life, and unequal success, spiritual success, in the first century. So we have all that opposite sense of how old theology doesn't evolve, but it keeps opposing the theology of life in and of spiritual evolution. It keeps wanting to rob that forward thrust of new theology. Old theology is going to try to rob it. Well, isn't she saying, watch out. Don't try to present this to old theology. It will always come and want to persecute life in and of spirit, life in and of the new theology. And so don't try to cast thy pearls amongst those who are of the unreceptive thought. Don't try to convince them. Isn't it wonderful? And yet Mrs. Eddy herself had to keep learning the lesson. She kept hoping that old theology would get it. Didn't she? We know that right at the beginning there, when she presented Christian Science, she had ministers and so forth give it from the pulpit. And yet she saw that that was going to rob Christianity, her new theology of its life, because of their interpretations, their personal views were eventually going to rob it. So she took it away from ministers preaching Christian Science and gave it to the impersonal lesson sermon, to read from the textbook and to read from the Bible. So she had to learn the lesson. She, when we know her history, her biographies about her, we know how she kept wanting to impress theology until finally she gave up on it. It only persecuted. So we go on to the next marginal heading. The true logos is always what? Logos means word. The true Logos, the true word, the true life, is demonstrably Christian Science, the natural law of spirit, of harmony, which overcomes, here we hear the epitome, that true life in and of spirit overcomes all material resistance. That's why discord is, it's overcoming all discord. What's discord at this point? Material resistance. If we had discord as under life in and of mind, it would have been
ignorance,
unreceptive thought. So the word discord is empty until defined by the context. So discord is everything that is discordant to the forward thrust of life in and of spirit. So discord is that material resistance. So life, the word of God, that natural law of spirit, through the operation of the Christ, is going to overcome discord or any material resistance. Not because the science is supernatural or preternatural. It's natural. She already said that in the first tones that we took last year. Nor because it is the infraction of divine law. It isn't. It's natural law. But because it is the immutable law of God good. Because it is the immutable natural law of spirit good. Oh, it's so powerful. I feel that often when we go through this, that, as I said before, that you can just see science and consciousness that now at work in the economy of being. Her economy of words and the way she puts them together are just so economical and to the point. Jesus said, I knew that thou hearest me always. And he raised life, Lazarus from the dead. Opposite of life. So Jesus said, I know that thou hearest me. Who's he praying to? God. And God at this point is life in and of spirit. He says, I knew that thou, the Father, which is life in and of spirit, hearest me always. And because life is in and of spirit and evolves and is only natural in good that evolves, Lazarus cannot belong to life in and of material retrogression. Lazarus is not of life in and of entropy. Lazarus was not born in the material concept. Lazarus is not subject to those laws of entropy, which are the laws of matter, which are the laws of death. Do you hear? The opposite of life in and of spiritual evolution. That's how he could heal Lazarus from the dead. That's this. At this point, Mrs. Eddy was healed from what? The belief of death. She saw that life was in and of spirit. She was healed at this exact tone that Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. Because she saw that life was in and of spiritual evolution and that life evolves and goes forward. That acts as a law of annihilation to the belief that life is in and of matter, in and of material evolution, as I said, which is based on the laws of entropy, which are based on those dead laws. And Jesus just broke Lazarus out of that sense of a material birth, of life in and of matter, and said, no, you have always been life in and of spirit. I know thou hearest me always. You have always been, Lazarus, only under life in and of spirit. He was healed and Mrs. Eddy was healed at the same point. And that understanding stilled the tempest. It healed the sick. It walked on water. There is divine authority for believing in the superiority of spiritual power over material existence. So she's just saying, look at that. Look at what Jesus and I have also shown to us. That there is divine authority. There is that principle. See, she's referring back to that principle. There is a principle behind believing in the superiority of life in and of spiritual evolution and not life in and of material resistance or material devolution. All right? So we take a look then at an abstraction. We epitomize this. And we see then, as I put my notes there, that Mrs. Eddy is using that logic of the equipollence of God. And equipollence of God, as we learned it already last year, means what? All right, good. Who said that? Very good. Ellen, that it's the allness of God in the nothingness of matter, isn't it? That's very nice. Because she said, as we saw on page 110, under the tone there of mind is spirit. We're at life is spirit, but under a spirit tone, mind is spirit. She says that on page 110, that it was that, if you want to turn, let's turn to it to the textbook. Let's just read up to that equipollence of God. Turn to page 109, and we'll hear this big spirit tone behind this reasoning with the equipollence of God, which is the logic she's using right here, the way she's reasoning here. She says, well, I have to stop here, then we'll...